The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
David Moyler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, lads.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his captain reckon there is a title race. But there's no title race, is there? The title race is done and dusted. We can stick a fork in it.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, you know, City are just... they're miles ahead of everyone. The form they're in, what is that, 16 games they've won in a row. I know it's all competitions, but, you know, they're just dismantling teams. Beat Liverpool last week 4-1, Tottenham 3-0. You know, it's just, they're just going on and on. And, you know, Liverpool are slipping up. United then, of course, draw with West Brom. It's just, it seems as if no one can catch them. You think, like, Leicester probably, after their result against Liverpool, might be the one to go and kick on. And but, look, if City win that game and hand their 10 points clear, you know, it's fair to say I don't think anyone's catching them.
I mean, I think it's the manner of the victories that they've started to piece together. There was a period in the middle of the run where they were scratching out a few 1-0s and they were like, oh, maybe they're not going to be able to score enough goals here. Something might happen. But that's not what's happened. What's happened is that they've taken immense confidence from the fact that they won a few tight games, and now confidence is flowing through every aspect of their play.
No, of course. But those victories are the ones that I would look at that are more impressive. It's when they win games 1-0 in that. Because you're used to seeing City play this, you know, dominant football where they just attack. And like you said, they score goals, right? But the games that, say, United, like Sheffield United, where you're conceding, where you're not kind of killing off a game, you know, Liverpool were the same with the West Brom game, etc. City were, you know, keeping clean sheets and winning those games 1-0. You knew it was only a matter of time before they were able to create so many chances and they would start taking them. And you look at the form, Gundogan's in who's... he's been probably, you know, the most informed midfielder in the world with the goals he scored. But that was the thing. Once they started getting those wins and kind of, you know, momentum picks up and, of course, like you say, confidence starts building, they've just gone from, you know, stride to stride. And they're unbelievable at the moment. And it's going to take some catching, or, I don't know, do they blow up, which I highly doubt. I think it's more a battle now for the other teams, to who finishes second, third and fourth.
Just on Gundogan, it's been a joy to watch him all season, David. He's been absolutely amazing. And it's even more of a good story, given the fact that, I guess, he maybe struggled post-injury. He was out for 276 days with that ACL injury. Like, that is the sort of thing that can derail a man's career. And to see a 30-year-old playing the best football of his career at this stage, it's a really good story around Manchester City, which we often have quite a cold relationship with as a club.
No, definitely. It's kind of one of those clubs, I suppose, that's... unless you've been a Manchester City fan for a long time, they're kind of, we associate anyone that kind of started supporting them once, you know, Sheikh Mansour came in and pumped the money and they became successful. But when you talk on Gundogan, I think he's one of those players that if you looked at him, he's probably played the same way for the last 8-9 years. You know, certainly this time with Dortmund and then when he came to City. Of course, look, he's had multiple knee injuries. I believe he's had 2 cruciates. So, like, you're right in saying that could derail him. But I think the big thing now is he's scoring a lot more goals. I imagine his performances haven't overly changed. And then when, you know, Kevin De Bruyne is playing, he will grab most of the headlines with his range of passing and the assists he's having. It's just without him, Gundogan has really stepped to the front and kind of, like, said, right, I'm going to carry this team. Because if you look at them, they are missing Aguero. Of course, look, Laporte's not played as much with the form of Diaz and Stones. And then De Bruyne has been in and out. That he's really stepped up and kind of like carried the team. Because if you were to say that, you know, those three players were going to miss the majority of the season and then, you know, City were going to be so dominant, you wouldn't have believed it. And a lot of that comes down to Gundogan and the form he's been in, because he's an exceptional player.
Guardiola, after the game, says, I said many times he could play as a striker like a false nine and people laughed. So Pep Guardiola is like twisting the knife in all the Ilkay Gundogan naysayers as well. It really seems like Pep is loving this season. He's loving the fact that De Bruyne is out. He's loving the fact that Sergio Aguero is out and still standing upon his empire that he has conquered and saying, look at this, look at what I've done to you, Premier League.
I know, and that's the scary thing, isn't it? But there's often been, you know, remarks of, you know, the squad that they have, like the players that they can, you know, call upon, choose, even for their starting 11. For anyone who plays fantasy knows what it's like, you know, when you're trying to pick City players, that the rotation is unbelievable. Like last week, we're raving about Foden's performance against Liverpool. And then, like, you know, you go, Gundogan is just still plowing along. But then there's other players like Bernardo Silva, you know, Riyad Mahrez, Sterling. Like, Sterling's not scoring the goals that we've seen him score over the past few seasons, but yet they're still, you know, dominating the Premier League, which is unheard of. But it's just, you know, it's all Pepe's an unbelievable manager. You know, you can say, and people are quick to say, like, look, he spent 200-300 million on the defence. But at the same time, he still finds ways to get these players to keep turning in performances. And certainly with this year and the kind of, you know, how manic it is with the games that they're playing, they're still, and you could, I believe that they'll win a domestic treble. I think that they'll win the FA Cup, they'll win the League Cup, they'll win it, like, and the Premier League. It's just a big one for him, and the one that, you know, Manchester City are really chasing is the Champions League. And can they win that? Now, that is where he's going to need De Bruyne and Aguero for something slightly different. You know, a player that can, rather than Gundogan is kind of controlling the midfield now in these games in the Premier League, but in the Champions League, you know, you're coming up against the best teams in Europe, that you're going to need 2-3 game changes on the pitch. And if he can get De Bruyne back, or one, you know, Aguero back as well, then, you know, a lot of teams will be fearful of City.
Aguero's on the bench yesterday. Go on, sorry, on.
What I mean though, Jerry, is like, it's all good and well being on the bench, but he needs Aguero 5-6 games of, you know, 60 minutes, 70 minutes, because he's not played enough football that he's not going to be able to come straight back in and be like, right, I'm here, guys, I'm back, you know, I'm back up to speed. He's going to take time to get back to the level that, you know, we know Aguero can get to.
It felt, David, back in September when they got smashed 5-2 by Leicester City, that there was almost an inevitability about how this might end for Pep Guardiola. And now there's an inevitability about how they're going to go on and cruise to this Premier League title. Are you surprised by how quickly it turned around, or how dominant they've actually been at certain times this season, given what we saw in the first few weeks of the season?
Well, I've always said that City were well capable of putting together a massive run. Now, I didn't expect 16 games or whatever, you know, in all competitions. I didn't expect that. But they were definitely capable of winning 5, 6, 7 Premier League games in a row. There was no doubt in that. It was more a matter of case of when they started. Now, if you remember back to the Tottenham game where they lost, like, Tottenham were top of the table, then City were 8th, I believe. And then they've just gone on and they've beaten everyone since. And I remember Pep coming out after kind of saying, we're going back to what, like, we do best. And now they just go and they just play and they just dominate and they just keep the, you know, they keep the ball and they suffocate teams. And then when they, you know, when the chances do arise, they're keeping them. And like you said, they were winning games 1-0 and whatever. That was the big thing. City were like leaking goals every now and then, but then the form of Diaz and Stones, they've been able to, you know, keep clean sheets, which has kind of been a big thing for them. But it's no surprise really, because, you know, they've got so many incredible world-class footballers.
I just wanted to talk about the defence, because we'd been having a debate on the show. I felt like John Stones' performance and improvement, for me, was one of those things that was going to be sustainable, because he's fulfilling the potential that had been there. There was an argument being put forward that actually it's just because he's suddenly beside somebody who's good and therefore he looks great. So everybody feel bad. He's an amazing defender, but actually it was because he was beside Paul McGrath. It's all those Liverpool defenders. They all look great beside Virgil, but actually Virgil's the glue that knits it together. It turns out John Stones is a good footballer, and actually he is having that moment in his life now where he is, independently of Ruben Diaz, a really good footballer. Laporte played again yesterday, and suddenly they have strength and depth at centre-back where we thought there was just weakness in the past.
No, definitely. And that's a big... You've got to give your, you know, plaudits to John Stones, because, like you said, he is a very good ball-playing defender. There was always questions on his 1v1 defending. That goes back to his Everton days, even when he went to City, where he won't have to defend as much. But certainly he's gone through like a tough time probably in the last 12 months. But somehow he's come through it. You know, he's dusted himself down. And like you said, he comes back and he slots in alongside Ruben Diaz and they just look incredible together. You just think any game that they play in, you know, they're solid, they're confident, they're not going to concede chances, they're not going to concede goals. And then, like you said, the strength and depth. Like, to think, as Liverpool fans, we're always looking now, you know, obviously, look, they've had the centre-half crisis. The importance of Virgil, it's kind of like, even if Fabinho, Henderson, Back, or one of those was playing alongside Virgil, you'd feel a lot more confident. And certainly, anyone watching City would have been the same with Laporte. Laporte was as important, you know, to Manchester City as Van Dijk was to Liverpool. But then he's out. And then, like, of course, look, they spend 60 million on Diaz. He comes in. still a lot of question marks over him being a young lad, but like he just looks, he looks like a Rolls Royce defender. He almost is better than Laporte, and then he's taken them on leaps and bounds, where you automatically would think like Laporte and Diaz would be their one and two, but now Stones has come in and, you know, struck this partnership. Like, you imagine Pep Guardiola's laughing because he's thinking, I've got all these centre-halves now to choose from who are all in flying form. We're not conceding chances and we look, you know, we look solid. I'm almost envious and jealous.
David, let's talk about Saturday afternoon, Leicester City's comeback win against Liverpool. And that's what it was. It was a comeback win for Leicester City. They were brilliant in turning the game around. But what did Liverpool do wrong, first of all, to allow this to happen?
I think whenever you play Leicester, you've got to know what Leicester have a game plan. They're very organised. You know what I mean? When you've got someone like Jamie Vardy who can play on the shoulder, he's so direct in his running. He's very clever. That you've got to know that if we don't see this game off, then Leicester are going to create chances. That's only inevitable. You know, in any game you watch, the opposition you play, whether they're bottom of the table or top of the table, they're going to get chances. And that was the thing with Liverpool. I just find at the moment, like, there was a big thing about Thiago, right? You can kind of talk about him, but Liverpool are averaging 65 passes in the final third, more than they have in the last few seasons. So that means they're obviously trying to kind of sustain attacks and keep, you know, kind of suffocate teams the way City do. But I don't think it suits Liverpool. Liverpool were used to like high speed and momentum where they're just like down the sides and they're just, you know, Salah and Mane are 100 mile an hour. I think they're slowing it down a bit too much and they're almost leaving teams get set up, you know, with their banks of four and making it very difficult. And Liverpool are kind of knocking on the door, but there's kind of no solution. Like up to the 68 minute, Liverpool dominated that game. They looked comfortable. Yes, there was the early chance early on for Vardy where, you know, they got in. That's going to happen. Certainly when you play against a team with a striker like that, Liverpool aren't killing games off, getting that kind of two goal cushion. But it's still like, it's a moment of madness that, you know, you can be 1-0 ahead and then within 7 minutes, you find yourself 3-1 down. They've got to find a way to, you know, get rid of these mistakes, because they've cost them massively in the last two games. And like Jurgen's come out and said after, you know, like, the title is gone for Liverpool. And it's unfortunate.
Just on that and what actually happened in the space of that 7 minutes, and I think it probably happened before that, is the tactical switch that Brendan Rodgers makes, goes from his 4-3-1 to a diamond in midfield. Why did that kill Liverpool? Why did that have such a big effect on him? The major glaring error notwithstanding.
It's a difficult one to put your finger on, but I've watched the kind of highlights of it back and the game, kind of short snippets. Obviously, I watched the game live, but then I've watched it back. There is a massive thing with Thiago. There's no doubting he's an exceptional ball player. He's incredible on the ball. But the big thing for me is he presses a lot differently than the other midfielders in Liverpool. And at times he's charging. He's quick to go to the ground. I don't think he's a good tackler. And he gets caught out of position and he gets popped around. It's certainly the big one is, you know, the third goal, Harvey Barnes' goal. Like back and Thiago are there next to Barnes, but he kind of just drifts into his space and he's not aware and he kind of just steps forward. And before you know it, he's out of the game. And there's a number of times. Now, I don't know, is that a case of it's going to take him time to get used to the way Jurgen Klopp plays, and certainly say Wijnaldum, whoever it might be, you know, Curtis Jones, Henderson in midfield, kind of link them three together. He just charges forward and he's kind of like caught out of position and he gets popped around. But I think when he's come from Bayern, where he did play as that defensive midfielder, they pressed differently than Liverpool, albeit that both teams pressed, you know, very high. I think at the moment he needs to almost sit down and go back to the drawing board, like Thiago, I mean, no, not Jurgen, and kind of figure out what way are these going? Because he at times he's vacating a lot of space where like Leicester were able to get out, and certainly with a diamond, like the deep line playmaker needs to be in and around. Of course, look, they've changed between Wijnaldum and Thiago, but at the moment, Thiago's not clicking. It's only when they're in possession, he looks good and he can get on it and he can create and he's an exceptional passer. But my question mark over him is defensively.
That was Kenny Cunningham's issue, wasn't it?
Mm.
Essentially, and he got absolutely slaughtered at the time for bringing it up. People like finding pictures of Kenny making bad tackles, and if you go back and look at our tweets around the time, that's what all the answers are. For me, there's a little bit of Juan Sebastian Varane joining Manchester United, where you have this really perfect system, and then you try and change it, and it's the player's job who you're bringing in to change it, as opposed to everybody else. I'm just not sure. Maybe that's a completely incorrect comparison to make, but because obviously they're different styles and it's a completely different era. But it just feels like it hasn't been the slam dunk home run that everybody assumed it was going to be. Because a good footballer like this is always going to add, but sometimes when that Liverpool team was so well balanced that actually the transition is far more difficult than just adding something else in.
No, definitely. And I think that's the big thing for Jurgen, is Jurgen's always been able to identify players that can kind of slot into the system, that nothing changes. Like the midfield of Fabinho, Henderson and Wijnaldum was full of energy all the time. Now, Fabinho isn't quick, but he reads the game exceptionally well. That's the difference. And like I didn't see Kenny's full piece. I saw like bits and pieces of it. But the problem with Thiago is he presses differently than the other players. And as much as people want to say, oh, he's wrong or he's right, you can see that in the Leicester game. Like, if you look at even, you know, for the free kick that Madison scores / you know, penalty with VAR, fine, right? But he charges out and he commits fouls. Did the same against Manchester City. Do you know what I mean? There's moments he charges out and he gets caught in the wrong position. So it's a case of it's like almost the best way I could describe it is in the past, Liverpool have always pressed together as a unit. So you'd have the front three press together, then the midfield would be solid together and they'd press together. Thiago is almost pressing on his own, that they're not linked together. And at that moment, if you press in ones and twos, you will get played around. This is the Premier League. You know, they're playing against the two games that brought up City and Leicester. They're good players. They find ways to play around you. That's the big thing. And I do understand like what you said about Kenny, because Thiago he's not doing it with the others. So when you do it on your own, it's very difficult and you will get caught out. And Liverpool have found that. He's been caught out several times.
Can you fix that in the off season?
Yeah, of course.
Or do you just decide that actually, look, sometimes these things don't work?
No, that can definitely be fixed. But at the same time, like Liverpool playing the Champions League this week. So like, you know, he needs time to be able to understand the way that the Liverpool team press. That can easily be fixed because look, any good coach, any good manager would sit down and they'll talk their player to, and the player will identify where am I going wrong? What's wrong? You know, and they'll be able to correct that. It's not as if we'd be having a totally different conversation if I said, look, the other two midfielders are pressing and Thiago's just standing still. He's doing nothing. He is pressing, but it's about just changing the way he presses to suit the system of Liverpool.
This is where Jurgen Klopp then earns his cash, David. This is going to be obviously the most important thing they do in the off-season. It's not about who do Liverpool sign. The questions will be around, and no doubt that'll be the big talk about who do they sign to fix this midfield. But actually the big challenge for him is how do they get Thiago in line with Klopp's pressing system? That pretty much, from what you're saying, sounds like his number one priority this year.
No, definitely. Jamie Carragher's obviously done a great little piece there showing the big transfers that Liverpool signed, the key moments to kind of take them on. And I definitely do think that Liverpool do need to sign some players. I definitely think they need to get someone, probably a striker, as much as I love Firmino. And everyone who listens, watches, knows I love Firmino. But they need someone to push him. He needs someone that really puts his place under threat, in the sense that, like, whether that be a number nine who scores goals. I do think that, like, people have said about another centre half. Look, I think we've just been very unfortunate. All the centre halves that we have are out for the entire season. So that's a big thing. But they'll all be back next year, which resolves that problem. Of course, there's the question marks over Wijnaldum with his contract. Does he stay? Does he go? I don't know. But I definitely think Thiago will come good. You know, Jurgen's clever enough, and he's a well experienced manager, and he's very good that he'll be able to, you know, tweakle that, put a bit of, you know, whatever he needs to, that tactical information into him, and he'll get him right. I've no doubt in that, because he is an exceptional footballer. But Thiago is gifted, and he's been gifted for a long time. There have been said, like, he's at the end of his career, he's 30. he's not. Like, he's completely fine. It's just that he needs to alter a few things to be able to fit the system better.
On Manchester United then, 1-1 draw at West Brom at the weekend, yeah. David. I guess the tone has changed entirely from can they contend in this year's Premier League to were they ever actually Premier League title challengers? And it kind of feels like that they've been in second place almost by default here. And you feel a little bit of sympathy for Solskjaer trying to talk up the fact that they can still push Manchester City here, despite the fact that the gap is clearly massive between the two sides. Were they really in a title race in your view? Was this all just a little bit of a fake title challenge in front of us?
Some of my best friends are United fans. They used to wind them up saying, you know, you won't finish top four. They were in a title race. You know what I mean? You can't get away from that. They were thereabouts. They were knocking on the door. Of course, you'd say the same about Leicester and Liverpool. But I think City have just kind of blown everyone out of the water. In regards to yesterday's game, United, I think the biggest thing that's killing United is it's almost like Liverpool. You're kind of, there's too many touches. You know, they're kind of too slow. Certainly against a team in the front line, against a team like West Brom, you can't afford teams, certainly Big Sam teams, time to get organised, be solid and be compact, because you're going to struggle to break them down. I just felt like, you know, certainly with Rashford, you're kind of taking too many touches in around the thing. It's got to be quick 1-2s, you know, play at that explosive pace that we've, you know, we love to watch Rashford play at and kind of get your shots off. At times it was just kind of too many passes, too many touches. They're trying to almost score the perfect goal. But they were in a title race, of course. Look, now I think it's a bit hard to come out and say, look, we're going to fight all the way. Of course they will. They're Manchester United, you know what I mean? They're going to fight till the end. But I just think City are miles ahead of everyone.
Just one last thing I wanted to ask you about, David. Just some reports over the last day or two about Robbie Brady and his future at Burnley. Obviously, his contract is up at the end of the season, and he's reportedly a transfer target for Celtic on a pre-contract deal. This be a good move for Robbie Brady?
Look, going to play for Celtic is nearly every Irish boy's dream, isn't it? At some stage in your career. Robbie's turning 30 soon. So I'd love to see Robbie playing in the Premier League. I think he's kicked on massively in the last few months when he's returned from injury. He's got into the, you know, Burnley team. He's played a lot of football. Of course, then there's all these different factors of years on the contract, wages, you know, the offer from Celtic might be better. I don't know. I've not spoken to Robbie about it. Of course, look, it would be a fantastic move for him to go to Celtic. As we've seen, fortunately, for Scottish football, isn't the same as Premier League football. I'd prefer to see Robbie playing week in, week out in the Premier League than playing for Celtic. But if he goes to Celtic, I've no doubt he'll be a great success and he'll do really well there. And then, you know, he'll help Celtic get back to, you know, challenging for the Scottish League and that. But I think that's Robbie's decision. You know, it's a tough one. Really, because there is a massive lure for Celtic. I had opportunities to join Celtic, but I've just been promoted to the Premier League and I didn't want to turn down a chance to play in the Premier League. Robbie might feel this is the next step in his career. So I think a lot of it comes down to what Robbie wants to do, what Robbie feels. But it's a tough one.
The undoubted biggest surprise of the weekend was the fact that Roy Keane's now on Instagram.
I know. I was on a call with my mates, chit-chatting, and they said, you won't believe Roy's got Instagram. And I said, no chance. And as quick they were to say, like, oh, Manchester United are following him, Mika Richards is tweeting or putting it out on Instagram, I said, no chance. So I actually had to message him myself to believe it was him. And he did, in fact, confirm it was him to me. So
what has changed? Why is Roy Keane suddenly cuddly? What's going on?
I don't know. Because Roy used to hammer me years ago about my social media. I just couldn't believe it. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, because this is someone who wasn't social media. It wasn't for him. But you know what I mean? He's moving with the times, I suppose. It's 2021. Everybody has Instagram, certainly. You look at even some of the managers. Like I'd say, if you went through the Premier League managers, it's probably more with Instagram than without Instagram. So it is an interesting one, but no, it's great. How active he'll be on Instagram, I don't know. But
pretty active. Two tweets or two posts, 2 days, 1 million followers. It's not bad.
Yeah, I know. And that he'll keep growing. It's just, I don't know. Like, if he's going to post pictures like he's posting them, great. It'd be interesting to see if he does like a live Q&A or, you know, something along those lines. But it'd be certainly interesting.
What did you message him, David? Did that, like, is it roy.you sort of thing?
No, I just asked him. I said, I can't believe you're on Instagram. And he said, he just replied to me saying, about time I dipped into the social media world.
And what grief was he giving you when you were on social media? What was his anti-social media stance in those days?
Look, I think it's the same with everyone. Less talking on Twitter and more talking on the pitch. I think that was the same with everyone else. You know, that was when social media was relatively young and people didn't know exactly what it was. You know, certainly. But look. Unfortunately, I was on the Saturday show not so long ago. It is modern society. Everybody's on it. Johnny Ward was talking about the first thing you see in the morning is your phone. The last thing last thing at night you see is your phone, which is very true. You know what I mean? I only said it to my wife after. I was going, geez, we're both on our phones before we go to bed. You know what I mean? Can you not put your phone down and have a conversation? But that's just the way the world now. It's the way it is. Everything's on Instagram. Everything's on Twitter. You know, now the younger generation are on TikTok, everything. It's all growing massively. The world is changing as we know it. The days of people going out buying newspapers and that are gone. Everybody reads stuff off the phone. You've got everything on every app. And now Instagram's one of them as well that everyone can't live without.
Mark Zuckerberg finally got his claws on Roy Keane. Good stuff, David. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
All right, see you, Garrett.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.